You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate, usually with Lisette and Jim. Today, I'm going to be taking on a subject of AI, college competence, and today's workforce. So basically, the name of the program is AI, degrees, and the competence crisis. Are we competent? Are we competent anymore? How do we get more competent? Let's take a look at things. So today's questions, are we becoming smarter? Or just better at looking smart. So what led me to this was thinking about AI in the workplace. That AI, you know, artificial intelligence is really being used by marketing departments, sales departments, communications, the outward facing communications with clients, the marketing materials that are being sent out, the videos, the LinkedIn posts, that there's this agent involved called artificial intelligence. Are we communicating much more clearly than ever before? But then we get into real life communication between people within the office or on the manufacturing plant floor. And now the AI, the artificial intelligence, is not part of that communication. So we may appear much more intelligent, much more organized, outward facing. But inward facing, are we losing that organization? Are we losing that competency by relying too highly on artificial intelligence without the ability to critically critique what it is doing for us? Meaning, if you know the subject matter, you can utilize it to help prepare something as long as you're able to go through it and see, is this correct? Is it not correct? Is it framing it in the right way? It's a big, helpful tool. But used too much, does it cause our own self abilities to waste away? That's one of the topics we're talking about. What else are we talking about? Credentials versus competence. More and more people are going to college now than ever before. 48% of 25 to 34-year-olds have a four-year degree. That's now, and I'll say that's in 2024, so the statistic's a couple of years old. But that's almost half. Of all 25 to 34-year-olds have a four-year college degree. You look at about 30 years ago, and that number was about half. It was about 23, 24% of that same age group in the same category. The interesting thing is that if you look at how these students, where when they were students, were testing, how they were quote, competent in English and math, or basically reading and arithmetic, that we've gone down, we've gone 10 points down on English reading comprehension scores, and we've gone 3 points down on math analysis. You know, when they do an assessment of the math ability, how are we competent in math? So this is a test that I'll talk about in a little bit. But our competency has gone down in high school. We're graduating from high school, and we have lower competencies across the nation, but we have more people going to college. Those two things don't seem to make a lot of sense together. And we're going to discuss that as well. We're going to talk about self-esteem versus capability, or self-esteem with capability, like confidence due to capability and performance, versus you can do anything, you can be anything, let's get your confidence up. It turns out that you feel higher self-esteem when you accomplish something and you do not accomplish things just by having high self-esteem. So since the 70s, we've started a new program of let's try to instill confidence in people. Give them, oh, you're doing well. You're doing a good job. Let's move you on to that next grade. Let's get you into that next class. Everybody's being successful. We're working together on teams and we're building people's self-esteem. But what it seems to be doing is eroding actual ability and capabilities in some people. So the biggest ability to increase self-esteem is by doing something, taking action, maybe stumbling a few times, and then being successful. That builds self-esteem. Just telling somebody they're doing a great job and trying to build them up with words does not lend itself to having accomplishments come afterwards. It may make people feel good for the time being, but maybe setting them up for future feelings of anxiety, depression, not feeling like they can get ahead, rather than struggle now and have success later. Let's talk about that as well. Information with understanding. So what we're seeking is information with understanding. Today, with AI, with all that's out there in social media, with all that's out there on computer, you can access all sorts of information, but you need to be able to understand it. You can't just rely on an outside source for your information. If you don't justify it, if you don't verify it, if you don't compare it, if you don't read the research that goes along with it to understand why it's true or false, or how it fits into the scheme of things, then we're losing the competency. But we have all this information that's being thrown at us, and we're not going to be able to tell, is this good or bad information? And that leads us to artificial intelligence and intelligence. Are we gaining artificial intelligence? Are we gaining the ability to work with it? But are we losing our own abilities, our own intelligence to discern rather whether the information that we're getting from the artificial intelligence is actually correct? Is it accurate? Does it make sense? If you have worked with artificial intelligence, you can look at something and say, hey, double check it against this because I think you're wrong. And many times it comes back and says, oh, you're right. This is what I found here. So don't take artificial intelligence's word for anything. Don't take my word for anything. Critical thinking says be objective, find proof, find evidence. Don't just take artificial intelligence word for it. Just don't take someone else's word for it. The issue is not the technology itself, but the issue is whether society is producing capable people. And is that a result of using this technology? Is this a good thing or bad thing? Tonight's discussion is not going to be anti-college. We're going to talk about college. It's not anti-trades. It's not actually anti-artificial intelligence. It's about understanding what creates competence. So let's look about 30 years ago. The contradiction with today versus 30 years ago, that today we have more college graduates, we have more technology, more information, more connectivity, more artificial intelligence. In fact, I think we didn't have any 30 years ago, but it might have been just, you know, those fake responders where someone would program a computer to make it seem like it was talking with you. I remember doing this in high school. We had a psychologist program that you would write, and he was just writing it in BASIC, and you would create this program that would discuss something with somebody and act like a psychologist, but it really was doing nothing but feeding back the information that you were giving it. We talked about all the benefits that we have today of, again, more college graduates, more technology, more information, more artificial intelligence, more connectivity through everything, but our employees are continuing to report shortages in what? In critical thinking, in communication with others, in problem solving, and with workplace relationships. So with all the benefits of this technology, we have these deficits, which are growing in comparison to how it used to be. How can educational attainment rise while skill shortages continue? Let's begin with what changed in education. So in 1994, to 1995, there were approximately 1.2 2 million bachelor degrees awarded. That's, again, 1994, 1995. Fast forward 30 years to today, there's about 2 million bachelor degrees awarded every year. This has fully outpaced the population, meaning the population has not almost doubled in that same amount of years, but we have grown 74%, almost doubling the amount of bachelor degrees that people are attaining. In fact, we're going to get into the real numbers, 48%, as we talked about before, 48% of 24 to 35-year-olds. I do that backwards all the time. 25 to 34-year-olds have bachelor degrees today, 48%. Back in 1994 to 1995, it was only 24%. So that age group has doubled. That age group has doubled. When you look at the general population, it's only gone up by 74%, but that age group is far growing in its educational completion. We're not going to talk about competency. We're just talking about certification or credential. I've got my college degree, but where does that actually leave us? So this is coming from the National Center for Educational Statistics, that America has never produced more degree holders. And I think we just went into these numbers, but 24% in 1995 had bachelor degrees of the 25 to 34-year-olds. In 2005, about 29% of that same age group. In 2015, 10 years ago or so, 36%, and today, 48%. So it's really skyrocketed. We've gone from a quarter to half, almost half of that age group getting bachelor degrees. A bachelor degree used to distinguish you from most workers. When one in four had a bachelor degree, wow, 75% didn't, you were much different. Today, it's one out of every two potential workers has a bachelor degree. So there's more people vying for these same jobs that are out there. In fact, we can talk about jobs and how the job market is. But what are these degrees in? Are these valuable degrees? Do they actually help you in obtaining more money and obtaining a job? Or do these degrees potentially make you feel stressed because now you've got a degree, but the jobs are still hard to find and the amount of pay isn't what you expect it to be? So we've had credential inflation. We've inflated the amount of people that have college degrees or the quote college credentials. When more people possess these credentials become less effective at distinguishing one person from another, also from distinguishing capability. The more people that get through college, the more, I'm not going to say easy college is, but in order to get more people through college, more people with college degrees, there has to be a push to get people enrolled. There has to be money available for these students to put it towards the college. There's these outstanding loans and outstanding debts that this not being unique anymore, but being the understood norm. You know, it's normal for you to go to college after high school. Well, it's not. It's only still about 50%. But we look at it as a thing to distinguish you from just a high school grad, that you can make so much more money as a college grad. And we're going to talk about that because that's not true. That the amount of degrees that 375,000 people a year get a bachelor degree in business. In health professions is about 263,000. In social sciences and history, 151,000. In biological sciences, 131,000. In psychology, 129,000. And in engineering, 123,000 people get their bachelor each year. Engineering represents about 6% of bachelor degrees. So it's very low, but yet it's one of the highest paying professions. It's the one of the most in demand professions or degrees. And this is one that you can truly get paid well for and get a job for. So America increasingly needs, in this technology driven world, more engineers, more technicians, more automation specialists, more skilled trades, people who are actually doing technical work. And when we talk about skilled trades, we're not talking about college education. We're talking about going into a trade, becoming an electrician, a plumber, a technician, that these are highly sought after, highly paid jobs that do not require a college degree. They may require technical training, but the payback, it far surpasses many of the bachelor degree programs. Are we producing what our economy and nation needs and what we need most? And the answer is probably a resounding no, we're not. We are importing workers because we are missing the workers in some of the tech sectors and the software sector and the engineering sectors. So the public high school graduation rate, now this is where things get a little weird, is that in 2011 and 12, it was about 80%. So about 80% of high school students graduated in that time frame. That's about 15 years ago. Today, it's about 87%, almost 90% of high school students graduate. So, we're doing much better. We have higher rates of graduation. And this is, again, from the National Center for Educational Statistics. Graduation rates are at the highest in modern history. We should be proud, shouldn't we? Does graduation equal mastery? That's the question. To answer that, we got to look at the proficiency of the students who are graduating. In 1992, I'm just going to give you a score number. So there's a reading assessment. The average reading score was 292 on some scale. Today, the average reading score is 282. It's a drop of 10 points. It's lower, 10 points lower than it was back in 1992. That is said to be a significant lowering of reading comprehension. And this is, again, from the National Assessment of Educational Progress. Actually, it's an assessment that we do nationwide. The reading proficiency today in comparison to before. So here's, let's look at 2024. That only 35% of students are seen as being proficient in reading. So that's from 2024. Basic proficiency is 33%, and those who are below basic have a hard time, struggle, and maybe are not able to read well at all is about 32%. One in three people are graduating from high school with a below proficient, below acceptable, below basic proficiency in reading. It remains one of the strongest predictors, though, of future learning and critical thinking, that reading ability, the ability to read well, to have high proficiency, is one of the number one predictors of having success in having ability to do critical thinking and also to more easily obtain future learning. In 2024, about 35% of 12th graders were proficient in reading, while approximately 48% of young adults age 25 to 34 held bachelor degrees. Okay, we're going to go this one more time. That only 35% were considered proficient, yet 48% went on to get bachelor degrees, meaning that there were students who were in that just basic level of reading comprehension that were out there getting bachelor degrees. I don't have a comparison of how that was to 30 years ago when only 24% were getting bachelor degrees. But my understanding would be, and I'm going to just give an example, is that there must be more people with basic and below basic reading comprehension getting bachelor degrees, which may mean they're getting the degree, but maybe they struggled more to get it. Maybe the school had programs that helped them get through, or maybe there are just more schools available to more people today. So we have a wider range of students obtaining bachelor degrees with lower levels of math and reading proficiency. So many college graduates probably entered college showing below proficient levels of math and reading. In fact, there's quite a good bit of them, you know, at least a quarter to a third of college students were below proficient. So is this better or worse than before? And let's talk about math. We've dropped 3 points in math over 30 years, actually since 2005. So that's 20 years. This is a math problem, isn't it? Right? 2025 minus 2005 is 20 years. I should have known that. So that has dropped, not significantly, unlike reading, which has dropped significantly. So with both of those things being an indicator of future success, reading highly predictive of critical thinking and future learning and all that, is that as more and more students go on to college with less proficiency in reading, it shows us that we may have not the outcomes we expect to get from college. Mathematics proficiency today, only 22% of graduating seniors are proficient in math. 33% are basic, and a whopping 45% of graduating students are below basic proficiency in math. That's almost one out of two students who graduate. If there are 10 students graduating, five of them, it's actually four and a half, but five of them are below a basic understanding and proficiency in math. Thing for technical school, for technical trades, for engineering, for those types of things that require math, if you don't have a proficiency in math, it's very difficult to succeed in those areas. So now that students are going to college, now that they're in the workforce, having lower proficiency may create anxiety, may create frustration, self-doubt, something they call imposter syndrome, when you know you haven't done well in school, but you've passed. I passed anyway, I have my degree, but I don't feel I deserve it. These things can lead to anxiety, they can lead to depression. So in quick summary of this first section, there's been a relatively small to significant decline in math and reading proficiency. There has been a doubling of those going to college for a bachelor degree, basically from 24% in 1995 to 48% in 2024. So are more students earning a degree? Are more people earning degrees with fewer able to demonstrate mathematical proficiency? And also with lower reading proficiency. This can lead to churning out people with bachelor's degrees with actually lower or difficulty in applying that information. That doesn't apply to everyone, but for some people it will. And so we have to look critically as, are we basically wasting students' times where they can get higher paying careers in more technical fields by focusing their efforts and their work and their time in more technical fields? Repeated advancement through school into college without mastery can weaken people's self-efficacy, that their belief in their own ability to perform a task, to complete something, that they, if they feel they're just being passed forward without mastering that subject, then we are pushing people forward. They're getting papers, they're getting credentials, but they may not have, they may lack the actual competency that they so desire and thought they were going to get by getting that higher education. Maybe that's something we need to look at. When we come back, we'll talk more on 90 Day Soulmate.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. In section one, we talked about how bachelor degrees increased dramatically over the last 30 years, that the degree holders have increased dramatically, that graduation rates have increased, That reading scores, however, have decreased, and math scores have decreased over the same time, the same amount of time. Something that has increased substantially, though, is student debt. Is that unfair? Are we doing something that is not fair to students? Go ahead, get these advanced degrees, but yet take on this additional debt. And the actual debt is far exceeding the cost increase of college. So college tuition has gone up, outpacing inflation dramatically. Have we become better at producing certificates than we are in producing competence? So here's how psychology can enter this discussion. Something called the self-esteem revolution. Back in the 1970s, and it accelerated through the 1980s and 1990s, there was this thing that was, let's build the self-esteem of people. If we build the self-esteem, they'll blossom, they'll rise to the challenge, they'll take on more challenges, and as they do that, they're going to be successful and they'll succeed more. We'll have more successful people if we can get people to have higher self-esteem. The better you feel about yourself, you'll perform the task better. That is the belief of the self-esteem revolution. What was the actual outcome of that? Well, we may have seen some of that outcome, is that we may have seen an actual decline in performance. Maybe everyone feels better at this younger age. Maybe we aren't as stressed in elementary school, but maybe then that is carried with us as we get older into the workforce. And now we have this issue because we didn't have that competency drilled into us in our youth because they were so busy patting us on the back and saying, good job, well done, even though we haven't done anything. One of the most influential reviews of self-esteem research was done by Roy Baumeister and his colleagues. The higher self-esteem alone did not reliably predict, and this is from the study, that the higher self-esteem did not reliably predict better grades, better performance, or greater achievement. In fact, that accomplishment often creates self-esteem. That accomplishment was a better predictor of good, strong, ongoing, resilient self-esteem than trying to build the self-esteem first in order to produce accomplishment. So accomplishment begets self-esteem. Self-esteem did not produce competence or accomplishment. Albert Bandura, another psychologist, he was one of the most influential psychologists in the 20th century. He studied learning, persistence, motivation, and human performance. Why do some people continue on while other people's quit? Other people quit. So why do some people have the self-efficacy? I'm going to see this through. I can do it. And part of it was the ability for people, the people who said, I can do this. I just heard this the other day. Someone said, I find this fun. I enjoy this. I enjoy the journey. I enjoy the struggle. It was one of those famous psychologists who talked about, I think it was tennis pros, what made the best tennis players better than the ones that were just below them. And he went on to say that those who enjoyed the playing of the game, the struggle against the others, that when they got a point, they felt good. When they lost the point, it was like, oh, I found out what I did. Let me do it differently the next time. That the belief in your own strength and your own accomplishment, because you've accomplished things in the past, produced the best self-efficacy. Proof that you can do, not just someone telling you, oh, you're going to be able to do it. I believe in you. Yes, someone believing you may make you feel good, but you proving to yourself that you're capable of doing it will keep that feeling with you for the long term. So self-efficacy, the belief that you can successfully perform a specific task. This comes into play for doing things like solving algebra, driving a car, repairing equipment, learning software, giving a presentation such as this. The key difference, self-esteem is, how do I feel about myself? Where self-efficacy is, I can actually do this. So one is, how do I feel doing this? Oh, I feel great doing this. And the other is, I can do this. And there's a different result based upon those two mindsets. People with health, people with higher self-efficacy are more likely to persist when things get difficult. They're more likely to learn new skills. They're more likely to recover from failure. They're more likely to have resilience. And I think last week's show was on resilience, or one of our prior shows, and it was the same thing, is that when you feel that you can get through it, you might not. When you feel you are capable of doing something, even though you fail the first time, you might get back on that bike and try it a second time and a third time. And eventually, your confidence level can take you through. But it's not just, I'm a great bicycle rider. It's like, I can do this. But it's also the knowledge, like past experience has shown that you've been able to accomplish things, and past accomplishment makes you predict your own future accomplishment more so than someone telling you you're going to do it. So internal, it's an internal motivation rather than an external motivation. Let's go on to our second part of this, which is the four-year degree problem. What is the problem of the four-year degree? Degrees are not the problem. Education is not the problem. Learning is not the problem. But what do these degrees represent? Do they actually represent capability, or do they just represent you took a certain amount of classes, you got through them, and you have the degree? That you completed a program, you showed up, you took the test, you did well enough to get through. It does not prove competence. It does not prove that you have good judgment. It doesn't prove that you're good at problem solving. It does not prove that you have capability. The marketplace demands and rewards people that have capability and can do it, rather than just have a piece of paper that says they've got a degree. That's why so many companies require experience. Why college became the default path? In the beginning of this whole thing, let's go back to many years ago, there was the thought that those with a college education would have a higher career earning. They'd be able to earn more over time. In fact, today, those with a four-year degree earn approximately $1,600 a week versus those who only have a high school degree, who have about $960 a week on average. This is U.S. So college educated, four-year degree, average is $1,600 a week. And high school graduation only is $960 a week. So that large deficit, that almost $600, $650 difference per week is seen as the college benefit. So is that real? Is that really the case? Do all college educations provide equal value? And the answer is no. That engineering can give you a starting salary for those 25-year-old to 34-year-olds, beginning of their range, can be $75,000 to $85,000 a year plus. Computer science, really good, often is somewhere between $70,000 and $90,000 plus, depending on where you are and where you're working. On the other hand, psychology and many liberal arts programs only end up with starting salaries of $40,000 to $55,000 a year. I saw that and I said, wait a minute, divide $40,000 to $55,000 a year by 52 weeks. What do you get? You get just about the same amount of money that a high school graduate gets without a four-year college degree. Let that sink in, that a four-year degree in some of these programs, psychology, many liberal arts fields, only gives you a job salary of what you would get if you only had a high school degree. Now, maybe it puts you in the office rather than on a factory floor. Maybe it puts you in a different position than somebody else. But the point is that it doesn't necessarily give you that same $600, $700 a week addition. And then you come out with the four-year degree thinking, I should be earning more than somebody who's just out of high school. Well, you don't. But furthermore, you have now college loans. You owe money. You owe money and you have no real benefit. On the other hand, that some of these technical schools or technical degrees or people who are doing HVAC, electronics, and things that don't require a four-year degree, they are earning the same amount as some of these engineers. They're earning 50, 60, 70, starting off the bat into the $100,000 range a year with a technical degree, like when I say technical school, or just going right into a technical and trade, a technical field or a trade. So when we're looking at people who are trying to earn money, good money, and have stable income moving forward, technical skilled labor can far outpace four-year degrees and not carry with them the burdensome loans that those others took out to get those other degrees. And again, not all degrees are equivalent. So if you get a computer science degree, if you get an engineering degree, you get a science degree, something in that field, the STEM areas, right? Science, technical, engineering, and math, I believe that's it. I might have that wrong. But if you get a degree in those areas, you're going to probably have a pretty decent salary. But if you're getting a degree in liberal arts, and or in psychology, you know, just the first level, you're not going to be out there demanding the same differential that you would with some of those other degrees. Student loan debt, this one blew me away. In 1995, there was $187 billion in student loan outstanding. Today, it's $1.77 trillion. It's about 10 times larger today. So we really pushed people into college. We created great profit centers for these colleges, and we put a huge burden on students who may not have gone to college, except they were told, if you do, you're going to have these great opportunities in front of you. And we've also, over the years, made it sound like, oh, you know, trades and trade schools and manual labor, you know, those are bad jobs, where it turns out that some of the best paid best tenured jobs, where your jobs are protected and you have advancement, are in those manual labor technical field, skilled. They can be skilled. So you can be working with computers, you can be working with manufacturing equipment, you can be somebody who's on a shop floor, who's working with machinery, who understands how to program them, who understands how to fix them, maintenance mechanics. Those types of jobs pay extraordinarily well. In comparison to some of these other four-year degree programs. The source of the loan, the student loan debt, was from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, by the way. So the cost of expectations is that we've taught people, go to school, get a degree, get a good job, build a successful life by doing this. But the reality is debt. There's many in competition now. When 48% of everyone's going to college and getting a four-year degree, you're no longer the exception. Underemployment, meaning you've got this degree and you're feeling it. It may be a self, you know, you think, oh, I'm going to have to be employed in something that doesn't make use of my four-year degree, and I feel underemployed. That's one thing. And then when you feel that, you have, you know, you feel depressed, you feel anxious, you feel like, why did I do this? You have the debt, but you don't have the job. What happens when expectations exceed reality? And so this, you talk about cognitive dissonance, you know, my expectation is this, my belief is this, but the reality of what I'm doing is this, is that there's this anxiety that's produced. That the example, people say, I have a four-year degree. Why am I working here? For instance, if you believe your education or abilities exceed the requirements of the job, that's what you may feel. Now, I want to go back to that there are some that their proficiency in math and reading is lower than how people who never went to school, the level of proficiency of math and reading of some people who have four-year degrees today, with 48% of people getting them, that proficiency is lower than it was 30 years ago for those who didn't go to a four-year degree school. Some people were kept out of colleges, and they should have had the opportunity. And today we are giving the opportunity for more. So there's good in that. I think everybody who can learn something new, something additional, who puts in the work, who can benefit for themselves and for society, it's a good thing. But the over expectation of the benefit to either you or society for some of the degrees that may not be what society needs today, it's a tough thing. It's a tough thing for us to discuss sometimes. When we come back, we're going to finish up this segment, or actually this show, on AI. We talked a little bit about AI, but we're talking about competence, capability, and the crisis in America today.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge and his ability to come up with amazing storylines, beautiful video edits, creativity of films unlike anyone else. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and James Gulmick, actually Jim Gulmick. Well, if it's good enough for Francis Ford Coppola, it's good enough for you.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. We're talking about AI, we're talking about technology, we're talking about colleges, we're talking about a lot of things. I just want to try to summarize a few things here. First of all, manufacturing workers in 1979, they needed mechanical aptitude, they needed basic mathematics and blueprint reading. They need to be able to speak as well. Manufacturing workers in 2025 may need computer literacy, automation knowledge, statistical process control, robotics interaction, technical troubleshooting, human-machine interface skills. Manufacturing has become more technical today than it used to be. Manufacturers need 3.8 million workers by 2033. That of those jobs that are needed, meaning workers to fill those jobs, there are going to be potentially 1.9 million jobs that go unfilled because people are not pursuing those technical types of positions that we just spoke about. America is not running out of jobs. We're running out of competent workers in the technical fields. Many people believe that trades don't pay. The median annual wage for electricians in 2024 was $62,000, for industrial maintenance, $63,000, and for elevator technicians, $106,000. This is from the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics. These are not fallback careers. These are probably careers that have huge advantages, huge advancement, and very good salaries and benefits. Why are we losing good workers? How many future welders, electricians, machinists, craftsmen, entrepreneurs were told success only comes through a degree? There may have been more people who went into trades than went into college 30 years ago. And then when they went into the trades, they came out with highly paid jobs. But they were being told, new students in high school were being told, oh, you're going to advance better with a college degree. And that didn't always work out, especially with degrees that were not what the nation was were requiring. You know, if we're requiring engineering degrees and people are going for psychology degrees, you just don't need another talk show about psychology. You just don't need somebody else saying, how do you feel? You know what? I feel sad. My job isn't paying me what I thought it was going to pay me. We don't need those, but we actually need the engineer, the technician, the tradespeople. And you might say, oh, well, it's manual labor. It is, but it's a skilled technical labor that's highly paid, highly rewarded, and with high career advancement. In 2005, Facebook was just beginning. Social media was limited. Now, in 2025 or 2026, the average teenager is 5 hours plus every day in social media. Some exceed 7 hours when you take into account all the screens that they have at their disposal. No generation in history has spent more time than any other. So no generation in history has spent more time comparing itself to others than this generation. Again, on social media, with friends, in chat, you know, in chats and discussions, that no generation has spent more time comparing itself to others. And a lot of that is, look how tough we have it. Look how easy you had it. And I think we have made it tougher on this generation by telling and continuing to tell lies, and also lies, inconvenient statements such as, you know, you need that 4-year degree, or you're going to do great. Just go on. I'm going to pass you to the next level of course. So here are some of the things that people compare. I should have that, and I don't. I deserve what they have. They seem happier than me. We talk about this on social media all the time. People are posting their smiling, happy lives on social media, and everybody does that. And now you look at other people and you go, well, they're all happy. They're experiencing wonderful lives. They're out traveling. They're with family. They're eating, whatever they're doing. And you're thinking, that's not my life. And when you look at social media, it looks like everyone on it is having a good time because they're posting that stuff. But that is not a reality. And when you compare yourself to someone's false presentation, their, quote, marketing personality, their influencer status, and in real life, it's nothing like that. Life is tough. Life is hard. But what do you want to share to get followers? Hey, look at how wonderful things are for me. So when we compare ourselves to others, we are going to feel like we do not compare in comparison. Imagine being told you're special, you deserve success, college guarantees opportunity, but then you end up with debt, you end up with competition, you end up with rejection, and your skills have gaps because you weren't pushed in the direction of technical, of engineering, of math, but you were just told a 4-year degree and you went for liberal arts education or for psychology. And again, there's nothing wrong with doing that because we need people who are proficient in these fields as well. But you have to understand, what is the reward for doing this? What are the job opportunities for doing this? And I believe people were sold a bill of goods. Part of that was to allow colleges to rake in more dollars. And then you take on the burden, I take on the burden, we have all these student loans, and we don't have the benefit of that. So if you don't use what you learn, if you don't work, and this goes back to AI, so AI can do stuff for us, and we can have AI do stuff, but if we don't use our intellectual capacity to discern and decipher the information and make sure it's correct and lay it out in a logical format and struggle with the way we present it. If we do not do that on a regular basis, we can start losing that ability. Basically, our brain writes over those patterns in our brain that allow us to do that, and we start losing it. The more we relinquish some of these tasks to AI, the more we become incapable of doing them. The beauty of AI is to add to your brain, not to take away from it. So that is one of the struggles that I wanted to start today's show with, which was, we are using AI a lot, and this is getting back and forth from college to AI, but with AI, we trust in it. We're like, look at how it can present something. Look at the marketing material it does. But in reality, it comes down to human interaction. It comes down to face-to-face meetings. It comes down to, do you understand what your client, what your company, what your partner wants and needs? And do you know how to fulfill it competently? Lizette asked me this while I was doing the show. What does this mean for relationships? And what it means is we don't want to spend so much time in social media that we lose, or in AI, or in games and fantasy land, that we lose the ability to communicate closely with our partners, our friends, our family, our neighbors, and our society and community. So with that, I want to appreciate you listening to 90 Day Soulmate today. I think that we have a bright future together, as long as we can settle in on what are the areas we need to focus on to grow our brains, our capabilities, our capacities, and we can pass that on to our children so they move in those directions with struggle, with proficiency, with mastery. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.